Hello, everybody. My
recording in progress.
I'm a compulsive overeater. Carla and Tricia Rose, thank you guys so much. Wonderful, inspirational story. And Carla, I lived in Atlanta for 14 years, so I just adore your accent. I'm originally a damn Yankee from Cincinnati, and everybody there is either German or Irish, which means they're all alcoholics and overeaters. you know, like a New Year's Eve outfit in Cincinnati is a flannel shirt and a pair of baggy jeans and some hiking boots, you know? And that's just the way it goes. You know, all of us here know what it's like to be bingers, picker-outers, eating the foods that cause us to go crazy, to feel shame, to eliminate, to whatever. You know, we all feel that, and we all know that, and that's why I love Overeaters Anonymous, because I can tell you some of the grossest things, and y'all will not bat an eye. And, you know, being a compulsive overeater was my very first addiction and my very last addiction. It was the hardest, but it isn't still, and I'll tell you why. Because last night, we all went out to a restaurant that overfeeds you, one of those restaurants that serves everything on an oval platter, and I ordered two appetizers, and that's what I had, because it was on my plan of eating, and it felt great to not, first of all, not pay $25, and second of all, to not eat, you know, a 12-ounce porterhouse and think, and just kind of in my mind think, oh, yeah, that was 4 ounces. Yeah, sure. so we all know what that's like, because the first thing that we lose with addiction is the truth, and the first thing we gain with addiction is denial. And I could deny for years that I was a compulsive overeater, because after I joined the Weigh and Pay when I was 42 years old and I lost 60 pounds and I started working out and I got all buff, and, you know, women, they kind of peak in their 40s. And when I was 44, I was skinny and buff, and so I didn't have a problem, you know, except for the fact that in that Pay and Weigh, I learned how to eat, but I didn't learn the spiritual solution to overeating. I had overeaten my whole life. As a kid, I remember being 5 years old and in front of the Christmas tree that was in front of our bay window at our house on Nordyke Road in Cincinnati, and thinking, I have a gut. And I'm 5 years old and I'm worried about having a gut, because my parents reminded me that, you know, skinny girls don't live alone. Skinny girls, you know, fat girls don't get husbands. Fat girls don't get good jobs. Fat girls aren't liked by anybody. And I come from a real sports competitive family. It's in my DNA, and I'm very competitive myself. And, you know, fat girls don't play well in sports. So I think that I stayed that way on purpose, A, because I'm a compulsive overeater and I had no spiritual solution to that. B, to show them they were wrong. My parents and my dad, they were wrong. I was going to excel at being a fat girl. And my dad weighed my sister and I every Sunday. Even after my parents divorced, my dad would live in his house, but he would drive over to our house so he could weigh my sister and I, because girls were not allowed to be overweight. And if we lost weight, we were added quarters per pound to our, allowance. And if we gained weight, then quarters got taken away per pound. Now, if you're 7 years old and you're being weighed for the next 10 years, you're going to gain weight no matter what, because you're actually growing. I guess what my dad thought was my starting weight was, you know, good enough for a 17-year-old. Who the hell knows? But the bottom line is that I learned that this disease is about shame, is about vanity, is about denying everything. And I proceeded to participate in other diseases. And when I, and my family was very dysfunctional, very, very abusive. That's not the reason why I overate. I overate because my, what somebody shared earlier is that I eat my feelings and I run away from things. And when I first got into OA, this girl, she would say, I swallow my problems with food. And man, did that resonate with me. That is, I mean, let's face it, the first time when you're upset about something, what's the first thing you think of? I mean, it's Wendy's double cheese, you know what I mean? Like, it's, I just, not now, but it used to be, and I'm so grateful for that, you know? I got sober in Atlanta, Georgia. I moved to Atlanta in 1982. I was 23 years old, and, you know, I was a drunk, a loosey-goosey, an overeater, a druggie. You name it, you know, I was the ultimate party girl, and which is an incomprehensible and demoralization type party girl, not the fun kind, you know. So not that there is a fun kind, maybe Paris Hilton, who knows. Anyway, so when I first got sober, about 60 days later, I realized I had compulsive overeating as a problem. I switched from, you know, bags of marijuana and quarts of beer to bags of Perrier and big old bags of Halloween candy of any kind. And that was my new bag and my new bottle. And I realized there that I had a problem, even though I knew my whole life, but I didn't know. You know what I mean? So they had Overeaters Anonymous in Atlanta was really big. Really, really healthy, that the program there was. So I started going to meetings, and I got a sponsor, and I worked the steps, kind of, you know. I didn't ever get abstinent because I could not think about ever not eating sugar. That just didn't, that was like, nope, that's not going to happen. I can't have a life like that. Even though I was able to not drink one day at a time, not smoke one day at a time, you know, but I couldn't think about sugar. Sugar was my last and only comfort, you know, and I wasn't going to let that go. So, but I attended OA there for several years, and that was from 1987 on. I moved to Sacramento in 1996, and found some meetings here and there, but never really took it serious, you know, as far as Overeaters Anonymous goes. I felt more comfortable in 100-pounder meetings. I was always about 60 to 70 pounds overweight, and so I was more comfortable with those guys, and because they're my people. And they didn't have those type of meetings here, like 100-pounder meetings or anorexic only or bulimics only. So, I still feel like it's a great idea to do that. Of course, everyone's welcome, but it was nice to be with my people and feel comfortable there. So anyway, I joined OA seriously in 2010, and I came in with the attitude of they better be nice to me, and they weren't, in my opinion. You know, I tried to fit in, you know, and nobody talked to me after the meeting, and I felt like a dork and uncomfortable. And I'd go to these meetings, and I was supposed to be the newcomer, and nobody came up to me, and I was like, screw them, you know? And remember, this is a disease of perception, too. So God only knows what really happened there, you know, because the disease of overeating, compulsive overeating, tries to tell you that whatever you're seeing and doing isn't true, and that you don't have that disease, and that you can have that little bit of something, you know, because it's not... It's okay if you have that little bit of something. You can control it from there on out. How many times have you heard that in your head? You know? So I joined, I was in another 12-step program, heavily involved. I got into general service, which is very serious in that program. And general service means, you know, above the group level, in the area level. And I started working with some really sickos. And... I was like Miss Sobriety, but, and they were all just so sick. But I started eating at them. And, you know, the tools of OA, one of them is anonymity. And what I thought that meant was I just tell everybody that I don't eat sugar and I don't eat flour and I don't eat any, you know, I eat only vegetables, fruits, and lean meats. You know, that was my idea of anonymity. But I was literally on a diet. I wasn't, that wasn't, you know, and if I did have a binge, then I would eat laxatives or go to the gym to get rid of it. And I was at the point, after 2010, I just went back out. I started eating slowly and surely, building up to binging, building up to eating those foods that, what you know, that make me go crazy. And I was eating at them. I remember driving to an area meeting one Saturday morning and thinking, I'm eating at them because I hate them, and I'm eating at them. And everybody knows that feeling, you know what I mean? Like when you, that moment of clarity, when you wake up and say, my life is unmanageable because of food, because of this addiction, my life is unmanageable, you know? So I remember the last, you know, they say never forget your last pig out, your last binge, your last over the top, you know? And I'll never forget it. On a Friday before Christmas, the sales team of my company came in and brought us a plate of those little delicious sugary things, right? So I took the whole plate and dumped it into my backpack. And my rationalization was, I will take these sugary things and I will wrap them up in little bags and give them to my neighbors for Christmas. And seriously believed that that's what I was going to do. I went to the gym. And on my way to a meeting after the gym, I was popping those little things in my mouth one by one so they all were gone. Then the next day was Christmas Eve, and I celebrated it with my two buddies and a bunch of other people, and they had all this stuff in their kitchen. And I kept going into it. Now, everybody thinks that I'm skinny because I eat perfectly lean meats, fruits, and vegetables only. Not that I'm bulimic and I work out at the gym 7 days a week, two hours a day to stay that way. And I remember, just to go back a minute, I remember talking to my sponsor about my problem with food. And she said, oh, I think one of those meetings is at my church. And so it's on Saturday morning, I think like around 9 o'clock. And I walked into that and I had, one of those, commuter mugs of coffee. And there's probably about 150 people there. They all turned around and stared at me when I had the mug of coffee. So I thought, what the hell? So I went back out to the vestibule and stuck the coffee on a shelf and came back in. And it was another program that deals with overeating. And they were talking about this really strict eating plan and things that they can't have. And they all came up to me afterwards and said, you're going to have to stop going to AA and Al-Anon, and you're going to have to focus on this program because you need to come here 7 days a week. And I was like, I don't think so. And when I called somebody in OA and I told them about that, they said, well, you know, they can lose their charter if they're saying that kind of stuff, you know, because we borrow Alcoholics Anonymous's, all of our steps, everything comes from AA and, anyway, a guy cornered me after that meeting, and he said, you know, if you join this program, then you don't have to work out as much. And I was like, oh, well, that's not so bad, you know, because, like, let's face it, I'm really ultimately lazy. Anyhow, I mean, I was only doing all that because I'm vain. So anyway, I didn't continue to go to that program because I thought the eating plan and all the stuff those people were talking about sounded insane. And when I got here, I know that the eating plan was between you and your sponsor. The tools are there for your, not for punishment, but for you to remain abstinent. And my plan of eating, what my sponsor taught me at the time was, you know, the three circles, the green, yellow, red. Green means okay, yellow means you know, keep in touch with that, very little. That's a very small circle of food. That's like just very small. And red is all the stuff that is the food that makes you insane. And I wrote all that stuff in a circle, and every January I recommit, and here's my circles. And I just texted it to my sponsor before the meeting. My abstinent date is January 5th, 2016, because that little party that I went to, and I went into their kitchen, and I destroyed everything of sugar and flour in there. And then I would come out, you know, crumbs on my face, and sit down and laugh at whatever movie we were watching, you know, and everything was normal. And then, you know, the disease was knocking at my head, and I had to go back into that kitchen and get that craziness and come back out again, stuffing it, you know, swallowing it, and, you know, it's just insanity. And I just felt that demoralization. And I went to a meeting on a Saturday night.
Okay.
5 minutes?
Yeah.
Thank you. And it was a Saturday night meeting. There wasn't a whole lot of recovery there, but I'm really, really grateful that I went, because it was exactly what I needed. And I found a sponsor, and I weigh in on the first of every month, right? That's what I heard you're supposed to do. That's a tool, is to weigh in the first of every month. So I weighed in, and I was at a certain weight, and I, of course, weighing in is a source of shame, fear, you know, failure or success, you know, weight. I mean, I remember running out of very important things because I'd weigh in at the first of the year, and I was under my goal weight, and I'd rush out to go weigh in at that paid weight because, man, I was gonna clock in at 5 pounds under, you know, and just craziness like that. And so, anyway, I worked the steps, and my sponsor and I, at the end of the step doing, at the end of the 12 steps, she was like, we were kind of more like friends. So I decided to get a new sponsor. That one didn't work out because of whatever reason, and found somebody who was, I went to the birthday party, okay? This is my first year. I was walking up there. I parked in front of the church, and I was walking around the corner. Everybody knows where it is. It's at Sutter, at the Sutter place. And I would take 2 steps forward and 1 step back, and 3 steps forward and 1 step back. I didn't want to go to that birthday party. But somebody had told me, you got to go there, and you got to stand up and say you need a sponsor. And I had a year of abstinence, I was slowly gaining weight because I wasn't weighing and measuring, you know. I was giving up sugar and flour, and that was good enough, by God. You know, I deserved to have, you know, as much meat as I want, you know, as much vegetables as I want. And anyhow, I stood up at that meeting and said I needed, oh, no, I put my name on the board. They had a big piece of the paper, and if you needed a sponsor, you put your name on it. And those who were willing to sponsor, their names were on it. And this lady walked up to me and said, are you Nancy Mick? I'm willing to sponsor you. And I was like, okay. And I was so grateful for that. We worked the steps and the traditions. I don't know whatever circumstances came up, but I got a new sponsor. Oh, because I switched to, you know, I started working in general service and service above the group, and I wanted to get somebody with experience with that. And you know, I started calling in food a few months into that first year, and I could see in my weigh-ins the weight going down because I was weighing and measuring. And I still do that today. I weighed in this morning, and I was a couple pounds up. And you know what? I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel shame. I didn't feel sorrow. I didn't feel pain. I just felt, well, Nance, you know, you better adjust something, you know. And that is such a gift, you guys. I'm free. I'm free of the bondage of self, of the bondage of food, of the bondage of weight. You know, vanity, who cares? I know that this hat on my head makes my face look fat, but I don't care. And the bottom line is, I know all y'all love me for whoever and whatever I am because I do. And I use these tools. I when I have a birthday party to go to or that party last night, I have a plan of action. And I actually talk to somebody about my plan of action. When there's a potluck, I have a plan of action. I have a plan of eating. I use the telephone. I sponsor. I use my sponsor. I use the literature. I write. I do service. I stay anonymous. And I love you guys, too, no matter what. And I'm happy to be here today. And I can't wait for the writing exercise. Thanks for letting me share.